The Catholic Channel Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world, and we look at what's going on in the world through the perspective of our Catholic values. We look at it, you know, through the rights of workers. We look at it about through how things affect the environment. We look at it about how people participate in various civic and community activities. We look at it from the point of view of family, and we look at it especially from the perspective of how what we're talking about and how we do things affect those who are struggling, those who are poor, those who are vulnerable. And, you know, work is very important, and the dignity of work, with rights, responsibilities. Those are some of the values that kind of we bring to bear on the events that are going on around us. And so as we're past the Christmas season, we're moving into the doldrums of January, and people in various parts of the country are experiencing snow and all of those type of inclement weather there. We are at the verge of the Martin Luther King weekend, and so we're going to be kind of speaking with somebody, Ansel Augustine, about that, and we're going to be speaking about the weekend and a little bit of connection between Dr. Martin Luther King and pro-life values, because this is also the time of the year when we kind of do the annual March for Life in Washington. And then the other thing we're going to be talking about a little bit later on in the show is no name-calling and bullying. And then we're going to be speaking with somebody who is working with a lot of young adults, actually high school students primarily, in Washington Heights, one of the neighborhoods of New York City. And we're going to speak with Juan Rosas about his work there and bullying, no name-calling. Hey, Fanny, so you abandoned us in New York and you kind of hung out with your sister in Chicago for a few days?
I did.
So give us a review of Chicago.
It was great. I may like it better than New York.
Well, but
that's such a bad thing to say.
But you're allowed to say that. Well, okay. Why? What'd you like about it?
Well, mostly the weather was basically the same, and you know how I feel about winter. But I think that the reason why I liked it more was because it was less crowded than New York. So it's a big city, not as big as New York, but for example, if you go into a very popular restaurant here in New York, you either have to make a reservation and you probably have to wait when you get there. Even though you have a reservation, you have to wait until your entire party gets there. And that was like not a thing in Chicago. You go, you don't make a reservation, you get seated right away.
Wow. So did you eat a lot?
I did. We ate a lot. Yeah.
So what'd you like? What was your favorite thing you had there?
Well, the most common thing, I guess, was the deep dish pizza, and we had it twice. I tried to have two slices. That wasn't working out. I had one and a half, and I was done, completely done.
So give us a review. If they put in front of you deep dish and the regular thin crust pizza, what would you pick?
Probably deep dish.
Yeah,
you
like that?
Oh. I mean, I love pizza.
Okay.
But I think the reason why I like deep dish, it's because it has a lot of cheese and I love cheese.
Okay.
And then they also include pieces of either bacon or sausage and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's good.
Hey, Jake, you ever made pizza?
Oh, yeah. I make it at home. I've never made the deep dish. I've only done the regular thin kind. But I am from Iowa City, which is kind of close to Chicago.
Yeah.
And I will say I love them both. You know, the best deep dish in Chicago is going to beat an average or really good pizza in New York. The best thin pizza in New York is going to beat like an average or really good one. It just depends. If it's the best, if it's like John's on Bleecker versus, you know, like the best Chicago has to offer, it's honestly, it's two 10s out of 10s, and you're not going wrong with either one. That's kind of where I'm at with it. I'm Switzerland in this one.
Well, what I am is, I mean, I'll eat pizza.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
I mean, I'll eat pizza, but without a doubt, you give me a good deep dish and a good thin.
Sure.
I'm going with the thin.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And the reason why, because you get more of a taste of, I think, of the cheese and the tomato and the topping and less of the dough.
That's true. The dough is very thick.
Yeah.
Thicker, yeah.
I mean, I'd prefer the thin pizza and a good piece of bread.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on how they layer it, though. I'll say that because some of them will make the deep dish where the dough is kind of down through the dish, and then they load it with cheese.
Yeah,
so and they kind of layer it. And a lot of people who hate on deep dish, they go, "Well, that's too much like lasagna." And I'm like, "Well, I love lasagna too. What are you talking about? If it's a lasagna versus pizza, this is going to be a close race as well."
All right. Yeah. So enough of this food frivolity. So it is the Martin Luther King weekend coming up. It's also around the time of the pro-life movement. And so I think we're going to talk about that. And, you know, perhaps the greatest champions of civil rights was the late Dr. Martin Luther King. And on Monday, January 21st, we're going to observe his legacy. And, you know, arguably it's become one of the biggest kind of social justice events, the celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King. And another event that has become is very important, especially from our perspective, is the annual March for Life on the past Friday. And so I think it's interesting to look at how Dr. King would have viewed the abortion debate. And since Roe v. Wade took place, that decision of the Supreme Court 4 years after his death, we really don't have a clear kind of a lot of what he did. But that's why we're going to speak with Ansel Augustine, the development director for the Sisters of the Holy Family in New Orleans. Ansel Augustine, welcome to Just Love. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show. It's an honor.
Hey, thank you for taking the time to be with us. In the kind of the discussion of Dr. Martin Luther King and his life, there are so many pieces that were, you know, part of that life. Is there anything in particular that, when you recall the way we celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King, anything in particular that really stands out from you as the need to continue to remember his legacy and to celebrate that?
Well, when I think about Brother Martin Luther King, I think about how he, at the time when he did his life and did his life's work, he was considered a radical. Almost like when we talk about Jesus Christ, during his lifetime, he was considered a radical because of the notions of love for all mankind and priority for the vulnerable, especially in Dr. King's life, you know, racial equality, economic justice, and peace for all was a radical notion, even though we value those things as a country, we value those things as a faith. And he also looked at civil rights and human rights for the most marginalized to create this beloved community as he sought. And so in his lifetime, although there were never any documented pieces where he talked about anti-abortion procedures or anything like that, he did talk about protection of life from the womb to the tomb, as we say in our community.
Did he actually use that phrase, from the womb to the tomb?
Well, it's a phrase that's in our community that we say in the Black Catholic community throughout when we talk about right to life and being pro-life.
No, I understand the phrase very well. I'm asking you the question, did Dr. King use that?
I don't think he used it himself, but a lot of what comes out in our communities comes from his teachings.
Okay. So, but, you know, when we think of Dr. Martin Luther King, and I think, you know, you talk about civil rights, economic justice, and peace, I would say that, you know, if you ask kind of the ordinary person, they probably wouldn't highlight his work for economic justice, and they probably wouldn't highlight the work for peace. They would focus on civil rights as being his legacy and what he focused on. Am I not reading that correctly?
No, you are. It's just what history has focused on. Correct.
Yeah, and but let's talk a little bit about, I realize that history is focused on that, but as you pointed out, there is a lot more to his life than merely civil rights. So could you talk a little bit about, you know, the transition in his life and maybe some of his movement towards focusing on economic justice issues?
Right. And I know if some of the great work that I've seen Catholic Charities do up there in New York and here in New Orleans and around the country is trying to make the playing field level for all so that all are seen and have the same equal abilities to create a just life as anyone else. So when we look at Martin Luther King's words of creating a beloved community, he talked about a community free of injustice and especially a community that promotes ethics of love, justice, and humanity in its legal, political, and civic life, as well as his religious, political, and moral spheres. As we look at his latter values, after the Civil Rights Bill was signed, he focused more on looking at workers' rights, looking at how just the Vietnam War was and wasn't, and what needs to be done to create more of a moral compass of America and the world so that we're truly living out the life and values that Jesus promotes.
So if we, Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated, I believe, we just celebrated the 50th anniversary of his assassination last year. How does the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King play out in kind of the current generation, whether it be the current generation of youth of color or of youth generally? How is he still well known?
Yeah, he is known. He is well known. Everybody knows the name Dr. Martin Luther King. I think for us, the movements that we see today among our young people, their justice oriented selves, you know, this the millennials and Generation Z and the generations coming after them, are holding society and our institutions accountable for what we say we are supposed to be about, and they want to see that played out. When we look at even what Pope Francis calls for us to defend the needs of the poor at all stages, which when he addressed Congress in 2015, the young people are drawn to those messages of doing the right thing because they see a lot of injustices in society, but they see a lot of lack of action. And so for our young people, when I talk about millennials and Gen Z, they want to see our institutions doing what we're called to do, and how our church responds to that is important as well. And I think all that comes from Martin Luther King and those like him that came before him.
We're speaking with Ansel Augustine, who is the Director of Development for the Sisters of Holy Family in New Orleans, which is his native town. And he's spoken at a variety of youth conventions. He was up here in New York for a little while. And so we're delighted that he's spending time with us on this Martin Luther King weekend. Ansel, let me tell you a little bit of an anecdote and about why I asked the question about the next generation. Mm-hmm. Do they really know him? Now, this is just a simple anecdote, maybe goes back 10 years or maybe even a little longer than, actually probably goes back a lot longer than that. And I was with a family out in California, and I was reading the biography of Dr. Martin Luther King. And one of the kids there, and this is a while ago, who was then a high school student, said to me, "What are you reading?" I said, "Oh, I'm reading a biography of King." And he said to me without batting an eye, he said, "Oh, I didn't know there was a biography of Elvis."
Yeah.
For him, the King was Elvis.
Right.
And I had to explain to him who Dr. Martin Luther King was. So I use that as a little anecdote because to ask the question, has the legacy and has the knowledge of him passed down from one generation to the next?
I believe so overall. That might be a significant or a random instance of that being the case. But I think overall with our education system, with our society as a whole, there is an overall recognition of Dr. King and his legacy of trying to improve society as for all people.
So if we fast forward from 1968 to now, and we looked at the injustices around us, and we, you know, I think, let me just take the mainstream point of view, which doesn't necessarily make it accurate, but I think the mainstream point of view would say, hey, since the time of Dr. Martin Luther King, there have been advances in equality and improvements in relationships among the various races, additional opportunities, additional advances. And at the same time, there are still lots of inequalities, lots of prejudice, lots of discrimination. So, you know, one can argue that, but I'm taking the mainstream kind of centrist position. So if we fast forward Dr. Martin Luther King to, let's say, 2019, this weekend, and he were given a speech this weekend, what would he focus on and what would he saying we need to do? And maybe what would be his strategy for, you know, carrying it out and getting it done?
Well, I think if Dr. King was alive today and was giving the speech this weekend, I think a lot of what he would focus on is still the injustices that are there in society. And I think his focus would be on not necessarily on working with the institutions, but just like our young people are doing today, working with them to work with the grassroots organizations and people in the trenches, for lack of better words, to build up this beloved community and society of justice. Because a lot of the pain, a lot of the injustice, a lot of the hurt are felt by those that are in the trenches or are in those marginalized areas. And I think that's where Dr. King would focus.
So in other words, but let's just get very specific. I mean, Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated when he was in Memphis dealing with the sanitation workers' strike.
Correct.
And so there was a specific item that he was focused on, et cetera. As opposed to kind of some of those generic ideas, what do you think some of the issues he would take on today, because they're so important to that cause of justice and furthering equality?
Well, we see today the widening gap between the rich and the poor, the have and the have-nots. I think he would talk about the economy. I think he would also talk about the continued issues of racism and classism, the discrimination that continues on. The lack of opportunities, and especially today, New Orleans, we're number one in the world for mass incarceration, and this for-profit prison industry that's affecting a lot of our Black and Hispanic and poor communities nationwide, I think that would be an issue he'd focus on as well.
Okay. Well, listen, you have been so generous with your time and kind of helping our listeners to understand and to appreciate the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. So thank you so much for joining us on Just Love on this Dr. Martin Luther King weekend. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. And y'all can send me a pizza whenever.
Okay, we will do that. Well, you send us an andouille sausage, we'll make a trade. How about that?
Deal.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Senior.
Ansel Augustine, the Director of Development for the Sisters of the Holy Family in New Orleans, and he also worked in the Office of Black Ministry in New Orleans. And so Fanny, let me ask you this question. This is the Martin Luther King weekend. And you do, you know, a lot of work with youth ministry.
Yep.
And primarily you're working with the Latino Hispanic community for the most part. Is there any awareness of who Dr. Martin Luther King is?
I think there is, mainly because of what's being taught in school. He's definitely part of our history and in the textbooks. I don't think that the youth is aware of how much he struggled in order to get what he wanted. So I think that they, for the most part, paint a very pretty picture of someone who persevered and didn't give up, as opposed to someone who was threatened, you know, they threatened his family, his own life, and he kept going. So I think it's a very top level knowledge. But they recently came out a few years ago with the movie Selma. So maybe a lot of kids saw, that's a really good movie. It was about his journey to Montgomery. So maybe, you know, if they saw that, they could have gotten a glimpse. So, you know, I think that if a teenager does want to learn more, they can, especially with the internet. But for the most part, I think it's very top level, just as much as they would know, I don't know, Theodore Roosevelt, they would probably know Martin Luther King at this point. It's very
well,
top.
And I think what you're saying is also they might know that in many ways, he was successful.
Yes.
So buses were desegregated.
Right. Right.
The Civil Rights Act was passed.
Yes.
He gave a big, successful speech mm-hmm. in Washington. Mm-hmm. But maybe didn't know that it didn't happen overnight
right.
and didn't
exactly.
know a lot of the struggles that were part of that.
Yeah.
So asking the question, staying focused on Hispanic youth, is there a similar figure that Hispanic youth might think about or relate to with regard to a similar movement that would have made advances for the Hispanic community, and whether it be in this country or in other countries, that they would say, oh, here's another hero who, you know, we might recognize?
I think, well, personally, I guess I'll use my Dominican community as an example. One of the things that my mom always spoke about growing up was the Maribal sister. There were three sisters, there were four, but three specifically, who wanted to overthrow the dictator at the time, Trujillo, and they were murdered for that. They were fighting for women's equality. They were fighting for less violence because he was literally killing anyone who opposed him. But I think any Dominican girl would know who they are, specifically a Dominican woman. But any Dominican would know who they are. But again, I also don't think that a Dominican youth would know the extent of their struggle. They maybe know because they weren't necessarily successful. It was their death that kind of brought in this entire movement to overthrow the government. But, I think it's the same concept. Because it was so long ago, they know of them. There's a museum with the Dominican Republic. There's been movies about them also. But the struggle is what's lacking.
So what years were they engaged in activism?
They were, I believe it was the 19... My mom was born. She was born in the 50s, so it must have been the 1950s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take a break. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Now, let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. You know, we say that because we got big problems we talk about. We talk about huge things. We just had a conversation on this Martin Luther King weekend about the tremendous struggle and the successes of Dr. Martin Luther King to deal with issues like bus desegregation, desegregation of schools, to deal with broader questions of civil rights and voting. And so those are big, big topics. And sometimes we say, well, what can I do? Maybe if I'm at a moment in time, I can make a contribution. But if it's not there, it's kind of beyond me. And that's why we say, if you love God, you love your neighbor, you love yourself individually, you will create a world that is more just and more compassionate. And each of us, in our own way, can love God more, we can love our neighbor more, and we can love ourselves more. So anyway, that's why we say that, and it's part of making our world more just and making our world more compassionate. So, Fanny, we got some news. What news? What news you want to do first?
Do you want to do the opioid news first?
Sure, let's talk about what's going on there.
Okay. So the opioid overdose has become the fifth most probable reason for preventable death in the U.S., according to a new report. The probability of dying from opioids has, for the first time, surpassed the likelihood of being killed in a car crash, according to the National Safety Council. So there were 37,814 deaths in 2016 alone. And in 2017, the deaths surpassed 70,000, according to the Center of Disease Controls. So the U.S. President Donald Trump signed an opioid law in late October, and the bipartisan law expanded medical treatment for opioid users and made it more difficult to mail illicit drugs. But critics also point to Trump's previous attempts to slash hundreds of billions of dollars from Medicaid, which provides treatment to around one-third of people seeking help for substance abuse.
So more people die from opioids than from car crashes.
Correct.
Wow, that's a lot. Now, I was in Albany earlier this week and spoke with somebody up there who's involved with that. And what she was telling me that it is incredibly high. But they've noticed in some places, at least, it's not increasing at some of the rates that it has been increasing. So that's good. Hopefully, some of the prevention, some of the education that we've been doing has had a lot of impact. And I know that Catholic Charities agencies throughout the country have been really, really involved in doing that. So one of the things, again, going back to the conversation with Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, some of the, you know, the debate, the chatter in the environment is, well, you know, one of the reasons that everybody's paying attention to opioid use right now is because it's affecting so many different communities, and it's affecting communities in which predominantly people are white.
Right.
And so what some people are saying, well, oh, now we're paying attention to it because it's not people of color. It's not that. And I think we got to be a little balanced with this. I think we got to recognize that, you know, there still is prejudice in the world. And so we got to take that as a serious reality that maybe that's one of the reasons we are doing this. At the same time, well, let's say, thank God we're doing it. You know, even and while we recognize that, you know, sometimes we are disproportionate in the way that we consider things wrong in our world and how we respond as a society. And that's one of the reasons why we talk about these things on Just Love, so that we hopefully reflect a little bit more about that. So opioids are something that are, even if they're plateauing a little bit, they're still at an incredibly, incredibly high level. We're going to keep up our efforts on prevention and on treatment. So what else we got?
Do you want to talk about McJesus?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about McJesus.
So it may seem like a funny name, but it's actually a sad story. So an artwork called McJesus, which was sculpted by a Finnish artist, Jani Lennon, And it depicts a crucified Ronald McDonald. It's on display as part of the Haifa's Museum Sacred Goods exhibit in Haifa, Israel. So the sculpture sparked violent protests at the museum, where hundreds of Christians are calling for its removal, according to reports from Monday. Rioters hurled a firebomb and threw rocks at police while demanding that the artwork be yanked from the museum's art exhibit last week. The museum leaders fought back by refusing to remove it, and instead just covered the exhibit and posted a sign saying that it was not meant to offend people.
So what do you think, Fanny?
I think that, yes, it's offensive. I think that the artist didn't know exactly what she was doing. And a lot of artists kind of use religious imagery to portray whatever it is that they want to portray. I don't think that she did it in a malicious way or anything like that. Maybe not. I don't know her. But I do think that they should take it down. I don't think that anything that offends anyone's either culture or religious views, whether it be Christian, Muslim, whatever it may be, should be displayed in that way, especially a crucifixion. That's a little rough.
Okay. Jake, what do you think?
I see why they're upset. That being said, I think they're giving, by protesting this thing violently the way they are,
yeah.
It's I don't think it's what Jesus would do, hurl what flaming whatever at the cops.
Yeah.
And then B, more importantly, all you're doing is giving this artist free press. I would have no idea what this Finnish artist's name was who put, you know, the Hamburglar or whoever on a crucifix. I would have no idea this was going on in Finland if it wasn't for a bunch of people going, how dare you do this to our Lord? Like, it's not your Lord. It's a thing that she made. All you're doing is giving her free press. That's all this is.
Okay. I got to tell you, I don't know what I think. Okay. Mm-hmm. I do think that we should have respect for religious symbols.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is somewhat disrespectful. You know, that it's in Haifa, Israel, which is a Jewish state. You know, makes it a little bit more significant in some ways. The fact that it's Arab Christians that are protesting, it's really complex. And I guess what's interesting to me is that, remember when there was and we believe that Jesus is God. Mm-hmm. So this is even different than what I'm going to say is, but remember when there was some comics about Mohammed, and was that in France?
Yep.
And didn't that cause some terror attacks and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think even riots. People were very upset.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on there, and so it's very, you know, I think we need to be respectful of religion, and obviously, I don't think firebombs and things are the way to protest, but but you can protest in a peaceful way. I also think one of the ways that one does protest is, which is hard for us, this is really, really hard, is to simply withhold our support.
Right.
So don't go to the museum.
Right.
And maybe encourage people not to go to the museum. And the other hand is, I think I do like people when we stand up for our religious beliefs and to say, you know, we're not going to take it. We don't want Jesus offended in that way. Whether that means it comes down, I don't know. But I'm really mixed on this stuff. And it's interesting because I usually don't get terribly upset about these things, because I think, okay, it's one person's expression. I do get very, very intrigued by the differential response of people depending on whose ethnicity, whose race, whose religion is being ridiculed or there's negativity about it, because there is a lot of different reaction. And I mean, this is my own observation. People say I'm wrong about this. There tends to be a little bit more tolerance and understanding and less upset when there's an issue about Catholics. People don't seem to get as outraged at it, where if there's something that makes fun of another religion or a particular race, it tends to get a lot more play. So it's an interesting, you know, reality that we're dealing with. And I think it's good to raise it up, because how we think about religious symbols is pretty, you know, pretty important, and how we kind of react to them. So anyway.
Did you hear about how the Mormons responded to Book of Mormon? I thought this was actually really good.
I don't. How did they do that?
Well, so the Book of Mormon, for those of you who aren't aware, it's a play written by the South Park guys. Mm-hmm. Very, very critical against the Mormon church. I mean, it made this crucifix with McDonald's look like nothing. I mean, it was rough. Yeah. It was as offensive as you'd think it would be being written by the South Park guys. So what the Mormon church did is they paid the Broadway Theater to take out an ad in the playbill that said, "Hey, I hope you enjoyed the play. If you would like some information on the actual Church of Mormon, if you're curious, here's the website." Ah. And that's what it was. They really, and I tend to go with you catch more, what is it, flies with honey than you do with firebombs or whatever. Isn't that the saying?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's an interesting conversation. Yeah. I think it's an interesting debate. And, you know, anyway, so why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about bullying, and we're going to talk about non-name calling. So I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us when we come back in a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Just do it. Just love. Just check out Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who's here right now. Take it away, Monsignor.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. Our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Well, this is the Martin Luther King weekend. It's also the weekend in which there is the pro-life march in Washington, D.C. So there's a lot of activity going on in the world and a lot of activity trying to make the world a better place. It's also probably not as well known, but it's also the time when we, as a country, and they name things after everything, but this is kind of no name-calling week also. So we thought we would do a little bit of conversation about that. And, you know, it's one of the things that social media has given us a more microscopic approach. And so, for instance, in the Me Too movement, the Occupy Wall Street, anti-bullying is another topic that's received a lot of attention lately. And one of the most developmental forms of bullying is name-calling. And it's probably something most of us remember from our playground days. And I bet, unless there are a few complete saints among us, probably have been guilty of doing it at some point in our lives. And so here to kind of talk to us is Juan Rosas, who is the community school director for Catholic Charities Alianza in New York City. Juan, welcome to Just Love.
Thank you so much, Monsignor.
Thanks for taking the time to come into the studio here today. And you hang out with a lot of young people, don't you?
Yes, sir, indeed.
And you like them, don't you?
Most days I do. No, they're
that's kind of like family too. Most days we like family, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I've heard it said that that children can be very cruel to other children. What's your take on how young people are doing in terms of bullying and name calling? What's going on today among kids?
So I have, the data shows the city controller here in New York City, Scott Stringer, did a report this past June, which showed that 82% of students reported that someone in their school had been harassed or called a name or bullied. So that's the macro level data that I have. At the micro level, the day-to-day of where we are, I think that is less so. I think that kids and young people are more conscientious and are more conscious of their actions when it comes to making others feel bad and making others feel threatened. So we have sort of 2 points here. The macro level, it does show there's a big increase in students reporting that others are being harassed. And I think at the micro level, I do see more consciousness among students about these issues.
Juan, I think what you point out is probably, right on target, important to keep in mind. I mean, whenever we see a report or somebody puts out a report. And so I'm going to share with our listeners a little bit of my own bias. Anytime anybody puts out a report, the only reason they put out a report is so it makes a splash. So they're going to, in my judgment, they kind of are going to, in my judgment, exaggerate the problem so that it gets a little bit higher visibility. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but right. But in other words, I'll just give listeners just a little bit of my own take on life. So, if you say that in any year, if you ask the question this way to somebody, over the course of the past year, have you ever heard of anybody being called a name or bullied? I guess you'd get a pretty high percentage. But if I ask the question, do you see bullying every day? You'd probably get a less question. So, Juan, I tend to agree with you, but let's, to help our listeners understand, I suspect, even though most young people are good kids and they're trying, there probably is more than a little name-calling and bullying that does go on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we operate, as you know, in the Washington Heights area of New York City. Our students do come from all points of the city, but the majority of them are in Washington Heights. And the majority of them are Dominican Americans or Dominicans. And in our culture, there is a lot of name calling that is not necessarily mean,
right?
But it happens. So you may call someone a gordita when they're a bit overweight,
right?
Or el flaco when they don't have so much weight.
Right.
Or la shorty with someone a small stature.
That's Spanglish, isn't it? La shorty. El cuartito.
Well, usually for Tito, you know, they don't use that. They use el flaco, el gordo.
Right.
So there is a lot of that that goes
right,
on.
Right. And again, without diminishing that, there's probably a lot of it that's like, maybe it's not the best, but it's not awful. You know, it's not necessarily really mean-spirited. It's kind of like, you know, maybe it doesn't help, but it's not really super, super bad.
Right. So it's the whole thing about who says it, maybe not be saying it with a mean spirit, but who's receiving it, you know, you don't know how they feel at that moment.
Right.
Did they look at themselves in the mirror that morning and felt fatter than ever or felt that they're not gaining any weight when they want to gain weight? Or felt that they're just too short, or they're just too tall.
Yeah.
So whoever's receiving the comment may not make it out as a mean comment, but it does affect them. It does affect how they feel.
So this is just a question, because and Fanny, if you got an opinion on this, this is just an impression. You know, when I look at rappers, okay, male rappers, okay, and I think most rappers are male, not exclusively. It's my impression that most of them are not flaquitos. They're not very thin. Do I get the impression that a lot of rappers, you know, they're carrying a few pounds around?
I think now it's not that much. I think, for example, I just saw Soulja Boy. Soulja Boy was trending on Twitter this morning. Because he was saying crazy things, but he's skinny.
Okay.
And there are a few with Khalifa, you know, Cardi B's husband, I'm forgetting his name, but he's skinny also. So there are a few.
But I know there are a few. Are most of them more than a little bit?
Most? I don't think it's most.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, I don't think it's most.
Okay.
But it's funny that you mentioned that. A few weeks ago, Drake, who you know, Canadian Drake, he put up a picture on his Instagram shirtless.
Right.
And he received about 4,000 comments of people laughing at his body figure.
Okay.
They were laughing at the fact that he wasn't that strong. He wasn't buffed up
so
that he shouldn't have his shirt off.
Okay. So
he got bullied.
But he's also not overweight.
Right.
So
I know Drake isn't.
Yeah. So
all right. So let's go back to the kids. Tell us about some of the serious bullying and name calling, not the superficial, because I imagine you do come across some of that.
Yes. Unfortunately, Monsignor, one of the things that we do see a lot where we are is that people who are Dominican Americans, the Latin Americans, are not spending as much time as they should with African Americans.
Okay.
And we do, the way they reference one another, you know, the black kids will say, well, the Spanish speaking kids or other words or the Hicks, they will say. Whereas the Dominican American kids will use words that I'd rather not repeat to talk about African American students. So one of the things that we do, we are sort of the neutral part. We are the part that goes in there to create community, is to build as many opportunities for them to interact with one another. Because, for example, because we have the school system that we have, they may go, they're in the same school, but they may go throughout the day without taking one class together with the others, except for probably physical education. So they may go throughout one day and not really have to really interact with one another. And what we do as an organization in their building is to really create opportunities for them to work together, to go out on trips together, to work on projects together through our office.
So we're speaking with Juan Rosas, who's the community school director at the Catholic Charities Alianza program up in Washington Heights. And I believe, just for our listeners who might be a little bit older and remember, he's actually doing it in the same school where school building where Henry Kissinger was educated and got his high school degree from, George
Correct.
Washington High School. Right?
Correct.
Right. So you talked about you know, the bullying that occurs, you know, maybe across racial ethnic groups. How does bullying and name calling and stuff relate to gangs?
Well, good question. Gangs have two, I think, definitive common traits. Gangs are about people creating family and tribes. It's about you are my tribe, you wear my colors.
Right.
So, for example, in Washington Heights, we have a lot of Trinitarios right now, which is actually an international organization. They're also in Spain, where Dominicans are, there's the Trinitarios. So they wear green. So you may see a lot of kids with green bracelets and green necklaces.
Now, Juan, I know we had a tragic situation in the Bronx probably about a year or so ago in which a young man was actually killed by some gang violence there. Was that the same group?
It was the same group.
Okay.
The Trinitarios.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So one of the definitive traits of being in a gang is that you have to conform to a tribal mentality. And even, again, you even wear the colors. You even wear green. You wear a green right. handkerchief or yeah. a green shirt or a green necklace, and that identifies you. But another one of the aspects of a gang is this notion of toxic masculinity, that you have to be an uber macho, that you have to be, you may not have the amount of respect for women. You may never have respect for LGBT people, because it's all about bringing the uber macho to the conversation. So gangs, I think that's their intersection, where gangs have an effect on bullying in our environments.
And one, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but just my trying to understand this is, while there's a sense of solidarity and community and family within the gang, is some of that uber macho manifestations I demonstrated by picking on people who are outside the gang?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And based on those notions that I share with you, who is less of a man than I am?
Right.
Well, you know,
right.
That girl, is she
yeah.
a...
Yeah.
You know, so it... Yes, you're
yeah.
right.
So, all right, let's cut to the chase a little bit. What can we do? We all recognize it's not a good thing. What do we do to counteract it? How do we counteract the bullying?
Yeah. So I think raising consciousness, I think that I do believe we've done a good job as a society where, you know, students are getting this on television. They're getting this even in some music, even some hip hop. People are talking about that it's not right to bully, that it's not right to make others feel bad. So I think we have to continue and we have to double down. When it comes to our schools, we have to make it part of our everyday life, right? We have to, you know, every week have our students in an assembly, in a group setting, and talk to them about the power of community. One thing that I always say, Monsignor, is that since we teach in New York City, and when we're talking about anti-bullying, we're really equipping our students to go on to work in a very diverse environment. You know, you have to respect people's differences because that's New York City.
Right.
So it's a gain also. You're not only not making others feel bad, but you're gaining because you are able to work with people who are different from you every day.
And it's interesting to me is that probably I'm kind of making this up, so correct me if I'm wrong. Bullying probably at the end of the day has a lot to do with differences. And what I mean by that is we talked initially about maybe Afro-Americans and Dominicans. Well, they're different than me, and so I can call them. Somebody's physically fit and somebody else is fat. I can pick on them. I maybe am a better athlete, so you're not an athlete. It's almost always, you know, my sexual orientation is different than yours, and therefore bullying almost seems to be a lack of respect for difference, and almost everybody defines difference as your difference is worse than me.
You're right, and that is exactly what it is. It's I have something that you don't. I'm a position of power and my difference is positive, yours is negative.
Right, it is. Juan, thank you. Juan Rosas, who is the manager of Catholic Charities Alianza Division program at in one of the schools in George Washington High School, who is doing his part and a really good job in dealing with youth development and trying to counteract the bullying that is going on there. And Fanny, I think we do talk about bullying, and I think in some of the images, we probably kind of assume, as Juan told us about the, you know, the uber macho stuff, but I'm willing to bet that even among young women, there can be bullying among young women.
Of course. I think that now there's a very large epidemic with girls trying to look like the Kardashians now. It wasn't really that way when
I
was growing
that.
Up.
I could say, if you want to look like Beyonce, I'd get it.
And Beyonce's up there also. Kylie Jenner, you know, they're all up there. It's this perfect.
Don't say them in the same breath. Please.
Okay, no, okay. I won't. Not the, please separate those sentences.
You can say J Lo and Beyonce.
Okay,
in J-Lo the same
and
breath.
Beyonce. Okay, right. I'll take them both. J Lo and Beyonce. So you have to look like these women. They're beautiful. Right. But I feel like with girls, if you don't have, you know, if you don't have long, beautiful hair, if you don't have a perfect hourglass body, then you're not beautiful.
Right. And again, it's different. If perfection is one image, you don't have it, then I can bully you
right.
because you don't have it.
Exactly.
Hey, thanks for being with us on Just Love, and let's all work for a world that is more peaceful, more just as we celebrate the Martin Luther King weekend, and a world that respects the sanctity, the dignity of human life. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Thanks for being with us on Just Love. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.